Welcome to The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, and also author of Animal Investigators, How the World's First Wildlife Forensics Lab is Solving Crimes and Saving Endangered Species. Today on The Wildlife, I'll talk about elephant poaching in Chad with Stephanie Vernon, founder and executive director of SOS Elephants in Chad. As a French lawyer specializing in elections and governance, she became passionate about her work overseas and traveled around the world to work in places like Nicaragua, Venezuela, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Ethiopia, Gabon, and Chad. She first came to Chad in 1995 to work with the government on electoral assistance. At that time, as a guest of the head of state, she had a desire to see the elephants and was struck by their dire situation. When she came back in 2007, she was shocked by the massive slaughter that was occurring. That's when she decided to take action and, in 2009, Stephanie created the non-governmental organization in Chad called SOS Elephants. SOS Elephants is dedicated to the preservation of elephants and their habitats in Chad and its neighbors. It works through a combination of methods including research, education, conservation, and counter-poaching actions. Stephanie now lives in Chad and is working closely with local communities teaching elephant conservation tactics. She has been educating local farmers on how to protect their crops from elephants. She has also been working tirelessly in the field with anti-poaching task forces, trying to get an idea of how desperate the situation is. One of the newest projects Stephanie has undertaken is building an elephant orphanage for the baby elephants who are orphaned after their mothers are poached for their ivory. Chad is one of the poorest countries in the world, with 80% of its population living below the poverty line. It suffered years of civil strife, and unrest in neighboring countries like Sudan often spills over and adds to the nation's instability. To make matters worse, 200,000 refugees have fled the violence in Darfur in neighboring Sudan and are now in Chad, further stressing Chad's capacity. Against that backdrop of human tragedy, there's another tragedy going on, the massive slaughter of Chad's elephants. In the 1980s, Chad had perhaps 20,000 elephants, but today, that number has declined by over 85% to under 3,000 in the entire country. There's a massacre going on, and it's happening fast. In the past year, about 250 elephants have been killed in Chad for their ivory. Zakuma National Park, in the southeastern part of the country, and where the country's elephants used to be concentrated, has suffered huge losses. In 2005, conservationists counted 3,885 elephants in the park. Today, that number is under 600. The situation is spiraling out of control. In a two-week period in February 2011, 20 elephants were poached in Chad for their ivory. All were killed outside of protected areas, making them easy targets. Stephanie notes that if poaching continues at this rate, not a single elephant will be alive in Chad in 3 years' time. She's doing all she can to stop this trend. For example, SOS Elephants has developed a network of 100 to 200 local people who inform the NGO about poaching activity, including providing positions of poachers or elephants. The NGO can then alert Chadian government forces about the incidents. In fact, in mid-March 2011, government forces apprehended the poachers involved in the February incident. They also seized AK-47s, horses, and 15 ivory tusks. It's a dangerous business. In those March arrests, two poachers were arrested and two killed. But sometimes it's the rangers who are not so lucky. For example, on May 15, 2007, three Chadian rangers were killed while protecting Chad's national stockpile of ivory at Zakuma National Park. And in April 2010, poachers killed two Chadian soldiers in a single weekend. A number of factors, like the use of sophisticated weapons and military tactics, suggest organized militias within Sudan or Somalia finance the poachers. Ivory sells for about $40 a kilo in Chad, a country where the average annual income is $530. That means one good tusk is worth a year's wages, making it easy for these militia groups to recruit nomadic tribes or others as poachers. The ivory is then exported to more developed nations, like China. Wildlife Conservation Society biologist and National Geographic Explorer-in-Residence, Michael Fay, points to the increased global acceptability of ivory as the reason for the dramatic increase in elephant poaching. Just in the last few years, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, or CITES, has allowed several one-off sales of ivory stockpiles. "The world thinks it's okay to buy ivory again," Fay said, "but anyone who thinks you can control ivory on the market is dreaming." While in some regions, tourism might provide an economic alternative, in Chad, the prospects are limited. That's not just because of lack of development in the country, but because the elephants in Chad have become very aggressive. "They are used to poachers," Stephanie says. "They have a good memory. To them, humans are bad." Consequently, as you'll hear in this interview, when an elephant in Chad sees someone from 100 meters away, it will charge. That not only hinders any future tourism, but it also scares farmers, who are often right in the elephant's path. As a result, SOS Elephants also does a lot of training in rural areas about protecting crops using methods like solar barriers or red pepper to discourage elephants from raiding the farmland. They also encourage farmers to plant outside of migration corridors. As you'll hear in this interview, while SOS Elephants informs through traditional means, like workshops, it also spreads the word through sport. The NGO sponsors a soccer team, which acts as ambassadors for the elephants, and now more are springing up spontaneously across the country. Stephanie knows that changing public attitudes towards elephants and also towards ivories is the only way to stop the killing. When we spoke, I asked Stephanie how she first got interested in elephants in Chad.
Oh, it's a very long story. My first visit in Chad was in 1995. I was a guest of the head of state. I wanted to visit the elephants. It told me there are so many elephants around. I came back in Chad in 2007 working for the European Commission, having a mission to change the electoral law. And I just realized during the year I spent from 2007 to 2008 in Chad that there was a massive slaughtering of elephants. And I was so shocked because nobody was reacting. And the reason why I just decided to open and to fund the SOS Elephant of Chad.
When you first went, you were always interested in seeing the elephants there.
Yes, you know, my first trip in Africa was when I was 20, it was in Kenya. And for me, Africa means wild fauna. You cannot go to Africa if you don't see elephants, zebra, lions. So what is fascinating me in Africa is mainly the wild fauna.
And when you think of elephants, I know Americans tend to think of, you know, Southern Africa or East Africa, and we don't really think about Central Africa. Are there a lot of elephants in Central Africa?
For example, in Chad, let's say 20 years ago, there was 20,000 elephants. Now there is remaining 3,000 elephants. In the Republic of Central Africa, there was, I think, the same figure of elephants. There is, let's say, 3,000 to 4,000 elephants remaining. And Cameroon is exactly the same. So it happened there was a lot of elephants in Central Africa. Unfortunately, there is a lot of poaching, and more those elephants are under threat of completely disappearing.
Within Chad, where are most of the elephants located? Are they mostly in the Zukuma National Park?
No, it's very weird, you know. There is a big national park with a lot of funding from the European Commission called Zakuma. But it's very close it's on the east of the country. It's very close from Sudan and also from Republic of Central Africa. And let's say in 2006, there was 4,000 elephants in Zakuma Park. Last year, there was a census, you know, and apparently there is only like 500 elephants remaining in Zakuma Park. So what happened? They have all been killed. And most of the elephants of Chad now, they are in the south of the country, but completely living free in the wilderness. And there is absolutely no national park around, so they just move but between crops. So this is a big conflict between the peasants, the community, and the elephants.
Within
Zakuma, you said it's on the east, and you said there used to be 4,000 elephants just 5 years ago?
I do believe that was, let's say, 10,000 10 years ago. So the population of elephants of Zakuma have been completely disseminated by poacher. And there is guard there. There is actually, I think, almost 170 guards, rangers, just taking care of the protection of the park and security. And apparently, it didn't work. So for us, it's a big problem because we need rangers in other parts of the country, and we have no rangers, just soldiers of the head of state. And in Zakuma, there is a lot of rangers, but there is no more elephants. It's a big, big problem.
The rangers are posted in the park, but that's already been decimated. And then elsewhere where there's no national park, and the elephants are moving and they're still remaining, you don't have protection.
So we are working closely on my team with the National Army. You know, there is a special army in charge of the protection of the environment, but they are not trained, so they don't even know to catch a poacher. The poacher are very, they have specific tools. You cannot catch a poacher the same as you catch a rebel. So I think the strategy of the National Army to catch a poacher is really not efficient. They are still pushing.
Within the whole country, you said there are how many elephants? The census?
Not 3,000. 3,000 elephants are remaining.
And 700 or so are in the national park, and everything else is elsewhere?
Even less, 500. And most of them, they are moving in the south. So two big departments. One is called Logan Oriental. There should be a group of 1,500 elephants. Another one group of 1,500, sorry, near, not so far from Jamena. Let's say 200 kilometers away from Jamena. So they are completely living into the crops. And it's a big problem because, there is no plan to extend to the peasants. What should they do? And apparently, there is more and more population in Chad as everywhere else in the world. And there is absolutely no work that has been done by the authority of Chad or the Ministry of the Environment to explain to the peasants they shouldn't put their crops in the middle of the passage of the elephant, the corridor. And for me, it's a disaster because there is more and more conflict, and very obviously the local community and peasants are accomplices to the poachers. So when the poachers are coming into their area, instead of calling us or calling the army or the authorities, they just let it be because they are very happy when there is no more elephants. And it's a real tragedy and lack of lack of organization, discipline. It's a big problem for us.
What other animals are there with the elephants? Do you also have giraffes and zebra and lots of other animals?
There is no zebra in Chad, but there is many giraffes in Zakuma Park. Some of them are living free a little bit in other parts of the country. Many lions in Zakuma. In fact, in Zakuma, you can find a lot of wild fauna, but no more elephants.
And then elsewhere in the country, do you also have a lot of other animals or mostly elephants?
There is another park. It's called Senaura. It's very near from Cameroon. And the wild fauna is moving from the national park of Senaura. And another park in Cameroon called Bubanjida. They have a common frontier. You can find a lot of wild fauna there. But the population are not so, they are not embedded into the process, so they don't even know what to do. There is still a lot to do to reinforce the capacity, of the community to understand what is wild fauna, how they can manage the wild fauna, how they can open the ecology. I think when I'm looking at Kenya, maybe Chad needs 20 years more, but the time, but it will be too late. So it's a big problematic.
Elephants, are they mostly, it sounds as if they're mostly seen as a threat because they're destroying crops that people are planting. Is that right?
Of course, definitely. And on the wolf, it's like the elephant of Chad are very aggressive. If you see them 100 meters away, they charge you. They don't, in Kenya or in other place where they are used to tourists, they can be very, passive and not violent. But in Chad, if they see you, they are charging you. Sometimes you can see 100 elephants charging you. So, because they are used to pushers, and they know human beings are pushers. Therefore, they have a big trauma, you know. I think they have a good memory, and very likely they are becoming very aggressive. So, there is no touristical infrastructure, but also the elephants of Chad are terribly not adjusted to what could be the future of Chad with ecotourism based on the exploitation of elephant vision, seat, and things like that.
So they become aggressive because they just identify all humans as poachers.
Yes. They're pushing every week. So most of them, they are like just survival. You know, they just survive from the what we call it genocide or holocaust. And they have a good memory. And for them, the humans are bad, you know. And it's very, they have a trauma. I do believe they are very aggressive comparing to other countries.
Why is the poaching so prevalent?
Nobody will admit that there is a more and more presence of Chinese into Chad, into Sudan, you know, into Central Africa, into Cameroon. And the poachers are selling the ivory to the Chinese people, and Chinese people, they absolutely do not care if it's forbidden or not forbidden. They just want to buy as much ivory as they can, you know. Everywhere you have some company in Chad establishing, you know, you have a pushing around. And I told my team, listen, before two months this area was safe, now there is a Chinese company exploiting, I don't know, oil or gold or whatever. We have pushing around. So definitely there is a big connection between pushing on the Chinese presence.
So most of the poaching is for the ivory and not for meat or anything?
No. In China, you know, there is more than half of the population that is Muslim. So in their tradition, they believe they cannot eat the meat of elephant. So there is not bush meat, you know, traffic. It's mainly for the ivory.
So you said you can't eat the meat of elephant?
No, they can, but Muslims, they are not doing it. For them, I think it's like eating the meat of a pig, so they are not doing it. So everywhere we are, there is a pushing in Muslim area. We know that the elephant carcass stay here because nobody will eat the meat of the elephant.
Who exactly is doing the killing? Is it Chadians themselves, and are they being paid, or is it farmers who are doing the killing and getting paid?
This is really difficult for us to identify who are doing that. They are soldiers. Apparently, they are very well equipped, very well trained. They have good weapons, very sophisticated weapons, and they are carrying horse. And they have an Arabic nomadic style. For us, it's very, very difficult to say those guys are from Chad, from Sudan, from Cameroon. It's like a syndicate. But most of them have an Arabic style, you know. They are Muslim, and I do believe most of them are coming from Sudan. But the big problem with Chad, we have a common border with Sudan, and any horseman can cross the border. Nobody will know. He just crossed the border carrying a lot of stuff. Nobody can know what is in their stuff.
Where is the ivory going? Is it going back through Sudan?
I don't know. I think part of the merchandise going back to Khartoum. It's very easy. There is a big market and straight to China, very likely. And I have more and more suspicion about ivory from Chad. So I don't know. Right now I'm trying to work with the authority of the airport authority of security of airport of Jamena Airport. And, I'm trying to find a way to, I don't know, to investigate and to stop eventual traffic of potential traffic of ivory in the Jamena Airport, in capital city of Chad.
Who is responsible for the airport authority? Is it the National army? How does the, I guess my question is, how does the government work and who is responsible for what? You said you're working. Yeah, you're working with a national army that's connected specifically to environment.
Hmm. We are, listen, it's very weird, but we are mostly working with a close team of the head of state. You know, it's a tribal state, you know, on the ethnic Zagawa. The head of state is from an ethnic called Zagawa tribe. On most of them, they follow the head of state. So they have an important job, you know, in the administration of Chad. And usually, if I ask them something, they just try to do their best to help me. But civil servants are from the other administration, if they are from the other tribe, they don't care, you know, they don't care. The elephants are not their problem, and it's a big problem for me because we don't have enough people who feel responsible, you know, helping us. And I think some of the civil servants are totally irresponsible in Chad. They don't do their job properly. And most of the civil servants from the Ministry of Environment, they really don't care of what's going on with the elephants, you know, pushing. They really don't care.
Why does the head of state care? What makes him care?
Because I think his money, I don't know, I met him several times. I think he really likes his country to be developed. But there is such a huge level, high level of corruption that he doesn't realize that every time he's asking or ordering something, making a request, the channel is broke at some point, you know. And so I think this man really wants to do the best for his country. About the wife for now, for sure. He's trying to do his best, you know, to provide us assistance, but it's not enough, you know. There is not enough sensibilization. The people are very corrupt. The country is still very poor. And to explain to the population that it's their interest to save the elephants, it's not so easy. Most of them will tell me, listen, okay, what can you give us if we protect your elephants? And they don't realize that the elephants are their patrimony. It's not me. I'm a white person. I'm coming from France. It's not my patrimony. It's their patrimony.
How much is the ivory worth?
I don't know. There is a black market. It's very, I don't know. It's very, I'm not so sure about the figure, but for sure it's 1 kilo of ivory. It's more than a few hundred dollars. So imagine what it can be.
So that's a lot more than a year's.
Of course. You know, I was even thinking myself that in Chad, we have a problem with the rebellion of the Darfur. And I was thinking 2 years ago that maybe some of the people involved into the pushing are into this terrible, you know, genocide of the Darfur, and they need weapons. And because there is an embargo, I was suspecting part of the ivory sold to provide, you know, the rebels of Darfur weapons. So I think it's likely possible.
So those who are responsible for the genocide in Darfur may very well be doing the poaching to gain money for the genocide.
Yes, I was thinking of that, and it could be highly possible, but so far we have no clue, but some just, you know, I think it's very likely possible. The same as the Somalian, you know, are doing poaching in Kenya.
So far there's been no proof of that, but it seems likely.
Yes, we heard a lot of story, but you know, for us it's very difficult to catch them and to get a real clue. And even if there is clue, it's so under the secret of state that nobody will talk about it. You know, it's not a good publicity for a state. But I think it's a reality. There is a syndicate behind this huge, massive slaughtering of elephants. And just syndicate, very likely, it's to provide weapons, you know, to some rebels. Because I met some people from the United Nations 2 years ago, and they wanted to investigate about that, and they never told me what they discovered. But very likely, it's that.
It was a UN mission?
Yes, but they asked me to be a little bit discreet about their mission, so I cannot talk more, but very likely, the traffic of ivory, you know, is providing weapons and logistics to some rebels in the Darfur.
And you say, when you say syndicates, I know a lot of times some of the clues for organized syndicates are the types of weapons they're using, the poachers are using, or, you know, the other equipment or the routes. Is there any clues? You said that they were using very sophisticated weapons. Do you know what kind of weapons the poachers are using?
I don't know. I'm not so good in weapons, but every time I'm traveling with, you know, there is a dead elephant, I'm just asking what is the weapon, which weapon kills this elephant, and they always give me name of weapons that are highly sophisticated, and you cannot even find this kind of weapon for on the free market. I think some of the weapons are called Belgic. You know, it's apparently it's very highly sophisticated weapons. Some others are carrying in their house lance-roquette. I don't know if you say that in English, but it's a big weapon. You cannot get it so easily, you know, so it's war weapon.
Currently in Chad, is there a lot of other types of civil strife and war where these types of weapons would be used? What is the political situation currently?
Regarding the weapons, normally in Chad, you cannot carry weapons. It's totally forbidden. But there is still a lot of weapons in circulation. You know, it's a traditional habit. The country of Chad was destabilized several times by rebellions. The last rebellion who came to Jamena and to Jamena Town was in 2008. And everybody has got weapons, but officially nobody has weapons. So they are hiding their weapons everywhere, you know, in their garden, under their cars, in secret place. So there is a lot of weapons everywhere.
Is there a lot of crime everywhere or other types of violence?
No, there is no crime in Elite because the army is everywhere, you know. So there is not so much crime in Elite. No, it's not in Chad.
So tell me about SOS Elephants in Chad. Why did you? When did you first establish it?
It was officially registered in 2009, but we started the work with my team in 2008. So we got the official approval from the Ministry of Home. It was the beginning in March of 2009. And we started, it was in 2008 in Zakuma Park. So we were very lucky the first to denounce the killing of the elephants. Then I started sending my team all around the country in the south. And we were everywhere denouncing, pushing, trying to understand who was the accomplice. So we did a lot of work, you know, we have a big network. We are working closely with the administrative authority, with the national army. We did a lot, you know.
Before that, nobody was really acknowledging that elephant poaching was existing.
No, on the worst, you know, so I'm in conflict right now with the European Commission because we were the first to denounce the massive poaching in Zakuma Park. And because they were supporting the project with millions of dollars yearly, I think the head of the delegation of the European Commission was very upset against me, talking so freely about the fact that the elephants were being killed and they were putting so much money in that project. But this was a reality. But nobody was there, you know. There is no civil society to deal with the elephant issue, and we are the only one who are doing it. But, you know, you need a lot of time, you need a lot of dedication. The country is very corrupt, it's even risky, you know, because we know that some people involved in the poaching are living in the town, the capital. And sometimes my team is coming to me, my people, and saying to me, Steph, you know, you are exposing us to sanction because some of the family are involved in the poaching, and we know that, so we have to send them to jail, to sue them in court. Some of them lost their job, you know, some administrative authority were carrying weapons or were carrying ivory tusk in their home. So they were arrested, and everybody was saying this, and those guys have been arrested due to the work of SOS Elephants. So, you know, my team sometimes, They told me, listen, Steph, you are a foreigner, so nobody can kill you because you are under the protection of the state. You have a special statue as a foreigner. But some of the people from my team, they were afraid. They told me, Stephanie, they will make kill your children, our aunt, our uncle. And they were very afraid, you know, but so far nothing happened.
And how many people work for SOS Elephants?
We have in the board of directors 13 people right now. But we are, let's say, we have a network of, I would say, 100 to 200 people. But it's not so easy because our main problem right now is the lack of logistics. Our car is completely destroyed. We don't have so much funding. It's very difficult to raise funds for Chad because everybody knows the country is very highly corrupt. And the only organization who help us is UNDP. But I've not seen any other donors helping us. So imagine that I have to put my own money into the organization to maintain our activity. So it's difficult for me, more and more difficult.
When you say you have a network of 100 to 200 people, is that like a network of informants that tell you what's going on in their part of the country?
Yeah, definitely. So anything happening with the elephant, they call us, they tell us, listen, we heard the elephant here, we heard that there is a strange horseman here, there is this problem here with the crops. So we have a good network and people, we can go into the regions and they are accompanying us in the field, and so we have a network, yes.
And you said it was 15 people who actually work for the organization?
Yes, we are benevolent. We are all benevolent. So it's not easy because most of them, they don't want to spend too much time with me, running after pochers, trying to talk to the peasant, to the community, because they need to have other jobs to sustain their life and their family. So our biggest problem is the logistics right now.
Just getting around sounds very difficult.
Yes, on Chad is very expensive. It's one of the most expensive countries I've ever been in my life.
Just to live or to transport, just because everything is...
Everything. You can... everything is so expensive. Kenya is much less expensive. America is much less expensive.
For being such a small organization that's all volunteers, you really are doing a lot in terms of getting word out about what's happening. Can you tell me about some of your projects?
I think my three important projects now. I want to open the orphan place because there is more and more pushing and more baby elephants left alone in the bush. So before we intervened, the baby elephants were dying alone in the bush. And me, I made a survey and I talked to the peasant and I asked the peasant, when you see a baby elephant, what do you do? And they're just afraid to approach the baby elephant because they are afraid the horde of elephants will come back. So usually those elephants, they just die alone by dehydration and lack of milk and of maintenance. So now I told them, listen, if you see any baby elephant left alone, please call us. So more and more, they call us from all around the country and they just tell us, listen, we know there is a baby elephant left alone, there was a poaching nearby, what can we do? So now my main priority is to open the orphan place, to have a building, to get my staff. I'm using, Daphne Sheldrick staff from Kenya helping us, you know, as a keeper because they have no knowledge. My team, they don't know to take care of elephants, you know, they do a lot of mistakes. So I'm working closely with an elephant keeper from the Sheldrick's, orphan place. I'm sending them to Chad to have the knowledge. So this is one of my big projects, I don't know, because I'm a woman. So for me, it's very important to save and to rescue baby elephants. I think it's very inhuman to leave them in the bush alone and to wait till they die. It's something terrible, you know. But the big issue is that baby elephants cost a lot. The milk, the maintenance, the keeper, and we are very poor. You know, we don't have enough funding, so I don't know we will manage. If we have like 5-10 elephants, it will be a big issue for us. So this is one of my main projects right now. We have another project that is a volunteer program. So many people, you know, from all over the world, just call me on the telephone. We would like to help you. We would like to come. But my big issue is also the logistic. Our car is broken. We have only one car. We have no lodging for them. So I'm trying right now to raise funds to get more support in order that we can be sure those people who want to come to provide us assistance, to help us for the sensitization with the paysan, with the local community. Some of them will be involved in a counter-pushing, you know, discipline. They need to be properly welcomed by my team. And for the moment, it's not so easy, you know. This is the second thing I want to do, and I want also to organize a big, big campaign of sensitization everywhere, you know, making a movie about what is an elephant, what they can get from it, and all in other countries like Kenya or Tanzania, they manage their elephants, and it's providing resources for the local community, and explaining them that this is their patrimony. But so we need to organize like a caravan, and showing everywhere in the south of the country the movie about the elephants, you know, to but this requires also funding. So it's my three main projects right now.
Starting with the orphanage, just to give people a sense of the difficulties that you're going through. So where do you keep the baby elephant? How do you, when somebody calls you and says there's a baby elephant wandering around near them, how do you even get it back to your facility?
The last three one, well, listen, unfortunately, the three one died. The last one died, she was 8 months here, and then was Sadi. We have a place near, called Mayo-Lenier, where we have a small home, and we are the guests of the paramount chief. So he gave me a land, and he told me, listen, if you want to take care and to rescue the baby elephant in that place, it's your place. But now we need to build a real infrastructure.
You've recently had a tragedy that you just mentioned and lost a very special baby named Savi. Can you tell me where Savi came from and what he was like?
There was a big pushing. It was in June 2010. And a baby elephant was left alone. And so we rescued her. She was, I think she was almost 1 month, not even maybe less. And I had to go to Kenya in emergency to take the milk on the baby bottle, and then we slowly start taking care of Savi. I had a man from Kenya, from Daphne Sheldrake Place, and I sent him to Chad. And during 7 months, Savi was, we were in charge of Savi, and she had a pneumonia. It was the 15th of December last month, and it was very fast, and we couldn't do something. But myself, I was feeling very bad because I was very convinced that if we had more logistics, like a vet and a permanent vet, maybe Savi would be still alive. But we were lacking a lot of funding to have a proper organization. The same definition, you know, as she has a lot of logistics, she has funding, she has proper people. She can rescue baby elephant at any time for us. When we want to rescue them, it's a big challenge because we don't have the funding.
And so even just getting milk, I mean, how much does a baby elephant drink?
Let me remember. And a baby elephant is drinking every 3 hours. So it's, she must drink, let's say, 2.5 liters. Of milk every 2 hours, so it's a lot. And it cannot be a normal milk. We are using SMA, and it's one of the most expensive milk on earth. But, you know, for me, when Savi, she was my child, and my little child, so I didn't pay attention. Just, you know, I didn't care paying for her because it was like I was taking care of my baby.
Was she able to graze? How long do elephants stay on milk? or when can they start weaning themselves?
I think the elephants are milk dependent for almost 2 years, completely milk dependent. So Sabi, she was starting when she was 7 to eat little bits of grass, but they are milk dependent 2 years. And after, I think slowly, it's a mix, you know, regime between milk and herbs. So it's a long time with the baby elephant are dependent.
And currently, do you have any babies that you're caring for now?
No, but it can happen at any time. So right now, I am in Kenya just resting a little bit, but I'm ready at any time to jump in a flight and to go to Chad with my Kenyan keeper.
Now, I know another thing that you're doing, and also how we sort of virtually met, was your interest in collecting the DNA from elephants in Chad. So can you tell me a little bit about that and what you're doing regarding DNA? Why is it important to even do that?
I heard about Sam Wassa, you know, from Washington. It was like 1 year ago. And everybody told me, listen, if you want to stop the pushing on the traffic of ivory in a higher level, you should be involved in the NDA, you know, testing. So we enter into a protocol with the laboratory of Sam Wassa, and they send us some, you know, chemical products, and we just collect the bunch of the elephants from the place we knew there was elephants, and we send the bunch to the laboratory of Sam Wassa in order it can have an NDA, you know, tracking resources, and hopefully we will use this NDA in the future when there is stock, you know, of ivory catch we can find in the border or in the frontier, and we can hopefully I will be able to sue, you know, the trafficant if we can be sure that the NDA is coming from the Chadian elephant.
Right now, what you're doing is you're collecting dung and mailing it essentially to Sam Wasser at the University of Washington, and he's doing the genetic analysis and developing a database that can then be used to match ivory with an elephant from Chad.
Yes.
You're also, another thing that I noticed you were doing, you were talking a lot about the conflict between elephants and people, mainly because the elephants are going through the crops and destroying the crops. And it sounded like you're doing quite a bit related to that. And how can you even protect crops from elephants?
In Chad, we are trained to use the red paper, but the peasants are not so much convinced that it works. So we are doing a lot of training, explaining them, please use the red paper. The elephants, they don't like it. When they smell the red paper, they leave out of the crops. But it needs a lot of sensitization, workshop. And I do believe what is more efficient right now is using solar, you know, barrier. You have a lot of barrier solar in Kenya, and it works very well. But our main problem right now, it's not only the crop, it's also the fact that in Chad, they don't even know that they shouldn't put their crops in the middle of the corridor. So my big problem now, and I'm trying to, you know, to embark the authority of Chad in order that they can explain with me to the peasants they shouldn't put their crops in the middle of the corridor, because this is a traditional passage of elephants, and their crops will be systematically destroyed if they put it in the middle of this corridor. And for them, it's something weird, you know. When I'm talking to them, they believe I'm an alien, you know. But I need the support of the state and the administration to explain to those people that they shouldn't do that, because it's a complete nonsense to provide them a tooth to protect their crops if it's in the middle of the corridor, you know. I am advocating the elephant. They should have their own space. And right now, there is more and more population in Chad, and the elephants have no space. So those peasants coming to me and complaining about the destruction of their crops, there is an explanation for the mammal. The explanation is that they are just in the middle of the corridor.
The corridors, are they well known? Do you or other biologists know exactly where the corridors are?
Yes, everybody knows. The peasant, not sure, but the old people, the chief of paramount chief, they are perfectly aware where are the corridors. Because there is a lot of story, the elephant passing by there, elephant going there, they going to the river. So it's so easy to identify the corridor. It doesn't require so much work to do it. And this is why I'm a little bit, let's say, angry against some of the people of the government, because they don't even try to do it, you know, it's requested right now.
So you're working to basically explain about elephant corridors, because it does seem like a useless task if you're in the corridor to try and protect the crop when you know the elephants will keep coming.
Yes, of
course. Are any corridors protected, or is there a way to protect the corridors?
No, there is no, for the moment, no corridor protected, so it's very important right now, no. And I think it should start from our NGO, explaining them, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. But it requires a lot of fundings, of time, of discussion, negotiation. Most of them, they are asking me, the peasant, then if we do that, what we can get in exchange? We cannot give them something in exchange. They just have to do it for their benefit, but they don't understand really. They just want to bargain. If we leave free this corridor, can you pay for, I don't know what? We cannot do it, you know. We cannot do it. Only the state will be able to do it.
If they plant their crops out of the corridor,
yes,
then they wouldn't be destroyed and it would be beneficial to them.
Of course, of course. But, you know, lack of education, lack of knowledge, those people are very illiterate. It's very, very difficult, of course, definitely.
You were talking earlier about the elephants in Chad being extremely aggressive. Given that there's a lot of population physically near elephants, would the elephants, even if you were out of the corridor but near it, would the elephants be attacking and expanding where they go anyway?
No, mainly the elephants are moving into the corridor. So if I think the peasant or the community will be safe, they are just outside. We should find a way to secure the corridor, so to put some people or some system of tracking the pusher into the corridor. And the elephants also are very nervous, you know, because when they are in the crops, there is always fight. And the peasants try to push away the elephant, making a lot of noise, making terrible noise, fire. And it's an aggression for the elephant. So they become themselves very aggressive towards the humans.
If people are interested in elephants in Chad, what can they do to help?
I think they can embark into the volunteer program when we will have open it. And they can also finance us. You know, we really need financing. We are desperately in the need of funding. It's terrible. Even myself, I'm bénévole since 3-4 years. And, you know, to survive, I have to work time to time outside as expert in the United Nations in other countries. And I'm losing a lot of time in other countries doing something else, another activity. And during that time, I just realized my team is waiting for me. Even if I'm, you know, there is a leadership in this organization, and I'm the leadership. And when I'm not here, things slow down, you know. They don't have the same motivation to track the pusher, to protect the elephant, and it's very damaging. So we need definitely more funding.
And then I noticed on your website, which is soselephants.org, is that right?
Yes.
That you also had a wish list.
Yes. This is true. You can enter it to our website and have a look on our wish list, you know, what we need for the elephant fun place, what we need for, there is a wish list, yes.
And everything from baby blankets for, well, I should say, not human baby blankets, but elephant baby blankets.
It's the same, exactly the same.
And also, one of the things on that list was soccer equipment to play
yes.
soccer. Can you tell me what you're doing with that?
Okay, in the Logan Oriental, 200 kilometers away from Jamena, we have a soccer team. So they call themselves SOS Elephants. So they are playing every Sunday with other teams, but the here, our problem, they have no equipment. They have one ball, they have a few t-shirts, and they don't even have shoes. So it will be fantastic for us to be able to provide the SOS Elephant of Chad team equipment. You know, it will promote the cause of the elephants into the area.
By playing soccer, this team sort of acts as an ambassador for the elephants.
Yes, definitely.
How do they do that?
Is it more informal in how they talk with the other teams, or is it more formal that they also do some program or educational stuff?
No, it's very informal, but more and more we are entering into formalities and trying to organize, and they can be embarked in the sensitization campaign very easily.
It actually...
Every time there is a match, the administrative authority is calling me and saying, listen, you should be there. You are the president of the SOS Elephant and is making a public speech in front of the whole population. So the whole village is here, maybe 200-300 people. And they are talking about the fact that SOS Elephant, the elephants are their patrimony. They should protect them. They should help us detecting the poachers. So we are making sensitization through that football team.
It reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen the movie Invictus, where basically it shows when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa and how he used the sport of rugby to create more harmony and get blacks and whites to know each other better and acted as ambassadors, you know, cultural ambassadors. And you're doing the same thing, but with football or soccer. So that's an easy way for people to help you is by sending their old soccer equipment and soccer cleats and soccer balls.
No, it would be fantastic. And I know already that in other place of the country, in other areas, the people, they want to organize themselves and to have their own team. And I told them, what will be the name of your football team? They say, Elephant 2. Elephant 2. But I like the idea. And, you know, we can make something very formal with that. It would be absolutely fantastic. 250 elephants are killed every year. It's a massive killing. So if we don't succeed right now, it's a hand. In 2, 3, 4 years, there won't be any more elephants in this country. And I think it's a general phenomenon in the whole Central Africa, Cameroon, and the Republic of Central Africa. Meaning, if we don't succeed right now, it's a hand. And I'm sure that our main problem right now, the main failure is our lack of logistics. Because we have the human resource, but we don't know how we can do the activity without funding. It's terrible, you know.
Well, thank you for sharing your stories.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, you know. Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation about the dire situation facing elephants in Chad with Stephanie Vernon, founder and executive director of SOS Elephants in Chad.
Edited transcripts of selected programs are available on my website, laurelnemi.com, and also on mongabay.com. That's mongabay.com. You can also find archived episodes of The Wildlife on iTunes, at my website, laurelnemi.com, and at laurelnemi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Wildlife can also be heard on the Animal Wise Radio Network, which is available nationally and internationally, and is broadcast to any mobile internet device via Live 365, a 24/7 radio network. Of course, if you have any comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnemi.com. The Wildlife is generously underwritten by the Lake Champlain Land Trust, a nonprofit organization permanently conserving the lands, lakeshore, critical wildlife habitats, and natural areas of Lake Champlain. More information is available online at lclt.org. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nemi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP in Burlington, Vermont.